Welcome, everyone. Glad to have you back or joining for the first time. Special shout out to those people joining in. I'd like to welcome Amanda Adams here today. She came into my office yesterday with a fantastic story that's come up in the news about some interesting doings over at Fidelity Charitable. Fidelity Charitable, for those of you who don't know, is the largest charity in the U.S. It's a donor-advised fund, and we can go into that in more detail elsewhere, but Fidelity Charitable is apparently being sued. Amanda, what can you tell us?
Yes. So I found the story in the New York Times. It was an article called "Lawsuit Could Cool a Fast-Growing Way of Giving to Charities," and it was written by Paul Sullivan. It was published on May 31st of this year. And so in California, I'm looking at the complaint here that was filed in the court on August 10th, 2018. And it was filed in the Northern District of California. And the plaintiffs are the Fairbairn family versus the Fidelity Investments Charitable Fund as the defendant. So what's going on? Basic summary.
Oh, by the way, I just want to interject here.
Yes.
Everything we're talking about is public record.
Yes.
So names, details, there's a lot we don't know, but what we do know is findable by anyone on the web. So when we mention names, we would take care to keep private anything that would need to be. Okay, keep going.
Yes. So what happened was that in December 2017, this family made a $100 million donation to their donor advice fund at Fidelity Charitable. However, the plaintiffs are alleging that Fidelity Charitable mishandled the donation, costing them millions of dollars and severely impairing their ability to support the causes that are important to them, specifically Lyme disease research and fighting that disease.
So how do you mishandle a donation? Because typically, don't people just write a check and take the money in as a charity?
That is a very common way that people do things. The way this one happened is that it was a combination of cash and publicly traded shares. And so this family had about 1.93 million shares in a publicly traded company called Energys, which they donated as a whole without liquidating the shares before to their donor advice fund at Fidelity Charitable. So, when they made this donation, Fidelity's Charitable's policy is to liquidate the illiquid assets, like a share or stock, at the earliest possible date. So, that was some concern.
So, again, yeah. Sorry, I keep interrupting, but I'm going to ask you questions all throughout here. Mm-hmm. If they're donating stock that can be held and traded on Fidelity's platform, why would Fidelity need to liquidate stock that they hold in many other accounts on their platform?
That is a great question, and I don't have the answer to that, but their policy, at least for their charitable side and for donor advice funds, is for illiquid assets to liquidate them at the earliest possible date.
I just find that interesting that
a
stock that they allow anybody to trade in on their platform is an investment that they're not willing to hold on the charitable side. That means that they're being very selective about what investments, even publicly traded ones, they permit. So I think that's probably another discussion for another day is the ethics of investment selection or bias on the trading platforms. Okay, keep going.
Yes. So the family is saying that Fidelity Charitable made four promises. One, that when they liquidated the stock, that they would use sophisticated state-of-the-art methods and liquidate large blocks of the stock instead of all of it at one time. And it would not trade more than 10% of the daily trading volume of Energys shares. It would allow the Fairbairns to advise on a price limit for the selling of the stock, and that it would not liquidate any shares until the beginning of 2018.
Okay, so let me rephrase what I heard there in language I can understand. So they were going to wait until the beginning of the next year to liquidate anything. They were going to allow the clients to be involved on the timing and setting a price floor. And it wasn't set at a 10% of their own participation in the company, but at a 10% maximum amount of the daily trading volume for the company overall. Right?
Yes. Right.
Okay.
So the family, the Fairbairns, are alleging that Fidelity broke promptly and egregiously, as stated in the complaint, each of those four promises. Because first, it liquidated the entire block of shares in a 3-hour window on December 29th. They received the funds on December 27th. So this was in a very small time frame. It accounted for 16% of the day's exchange traded volume and a 35% of the volume over the 3-hour trading window.
What? Wait. So are you telling me they sold the entire stock portfolio within 3 hours?
Yes. On the very last trading day, on the very last afternoon of the year.
I don't even know how to respond to that. Okay.
So that was promise number two that was broken. Promise number three, Fidelity Charitable used inappropriate methodologies that caused its own trades to compete against each other and drive the share price down still further. And number four, that they did not tell the Fairbairns it was happening, let alone let them advise on the price limit.
Yeah, so let's go back to number three. What do you mean by inappropriate methodologies of liquidating the stock?
Oh, that is a great question. This is what they did. It was unbelievable. I could not believe it when I read it. Let me find it.
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Okay, so what Fidelity Charitable did is that it deployed multiple algorithms simultaneously in a way that caused algorithms to compete against each other in the market, which drove the share price down.
So wouldn't you think Fidelity Charitable, being part of a broker-dealer platform, would be smart enough to not have competing algorithms in its own trading?
You would think so. Later on in the complaint, they actually mentioned that Fidelity and that many investment institutions like them have fail-safes built in to prevent this kind of thing happening. However, whether it was an error, human error or technology error, the result was that it drove the share price down more than 30%.
Oof.
So this family had millions of dollars less as a tax deduction, which also meant millions of dollars less went to support the causes they were trying to support.
So, well, I think the tax deduction issue is separate from the ability to support the organizations that they were trying to support. Typically, from my understanding, isn't the tax deduction based on the value of the asset when gifted, not the value of the sell?
Well, with the stocks, let me address this, let me find it. So it's with shares, when you donate the actual shares, the deduction comes as shares are sold for that market price. No? Okay.
That's what I find unusual. and I'm sure some charities have a policy that does that. I'm wondering if that's the policy with Fidelity, because it's my understanding that especially if it's a publicly traded stock, we have a public market. We have... Mike?
Yeah.
Your computer just entered powered save mode. Is that an issue?
It should.
Okay, sorry. I guess I shouldn't have stopped. So I'm sure some charities have that policy in place, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but especially with publicly traded stock, you can ascertain a publicly reached value for that donation the day it's gifted. You don't have to find a buyer to reach a reasonable valuation for the gift. So I would think that that's an election by the charity if that's the case.
I believe so. I do know that further on in the complaint, part of it was that when the family reached out to Fidelity Charitable trying to understand where the error was, what's going on. And they got very little information from Fidelity. But when Fidelity issued the receipt, the donation receipt for the stock, the employee who was working with them, it was kind of their touch point with Fidelity, told them that they would just put December 2017 on the receipt and leave it to the family and their accountant to decide what date the shares were gifted and then the value
date. You're telling me that the charity gave a blank receipt to the donor.
Basically.
Okay. Okay. I'm
That's
pretty
basically
sure.
Basically what happened.
Yeah. The IRS does not uphold deductions that the donors... Well, yes. Okay, this is not like you're dropping clothes off at Goodwill or Savers.
No, and this is millions of dollars worth of stock.
Yeah, it's one thing to value your old sneakers at $10 or, well, they're probably not worth $10, but at whatever you value them, it's a big difference with millions of dollars.
Yes, and so that's all in the complaint alleged by the family. Again, that's, I don't know if that's, I haven't seen the actual receipt, but in the complaint, that is what the family claims. So that's a, because, I mean, there's a lot of donors who use donor advice funds for this purpose, to move illiquid assets in there, because smaller charities don't always have the capacity or the staff or administrative know-how in order to handle those. And so that's where DAFs often come in, because they'll have, the donors will move the funds into the DAF, and then they will use that charity to advise on grants and then to distribute those funds.
Yeah, and it's my understanding that at the end of the day, DAFs are best used to be able to take gifts of that nature, more complicated things, liquidate at some point, and then give grants to operating charities, the charities on the ground actually doing the work. That's the regulatory use. That's the best use for them, not as parking lots, which I know they've been accused of being in the news quite often here.
Yes.
But so I'm just still trying to wrap my mind around this. And again, I recognize this is a filing. These are allegations. But at the end of the day, the family's alleging that Fidelity Charitable told them to value their own charitable deduction, took the assets they gifted, sold them by bidding against themselves without talking to the family at all, and therefore sold them at huge losses right away, and thus made it so that there's millions of dollars less in the account to be able to go out and fund. What was the...
Their specific cause was Lyme disease.
To be able to fund Lyme disease, because it sounds like this family really did want to write those checks for Lyme disease. So there's millions of dollars less going into the medical research or helping, I would hope, fund those without the financial means to be able to receive medical care for that disease. How on earth could this happen?
There's a lot of questions that Fidelity is going to have to answer for in court. And hopefully it may go to court. Who knows? It may settle out of court. But Fidelity will need to answer these questions, because that is a huge concern. As a fiduciary, it is Fidelity's responsibility, both as a financial institution and for their operating charity branch, to do what's in the best interest of their client and the fund, at least over at the charity side. And this was not in any way a responsible act by them.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I've looked at and read about a lot of the lawsuits that have been brought against donor advised funds since they became more popular, since the 90s. And most lawsuits brought by donors tend to fail, because most of those lawsuits are based on whether or not the donor or the charity controls the money.
Yeah.
And for it to be a charitable gift, it's irrevocable and the donor no longer has control. That's not what this lawsuit is about.
Right.
This lawsuit is about a breach of fiduciary responsibility to ensure that those funds were taken care of to benefit the end user charities.
Yes. Yeah. So I personally think that the donor has standing in order to go forward with this lawsuit, because they've worked with donor advised funds before. According to the complaint, they were familiar with the process, how they worked, that they would be granting, you know, full ownership and control over to the charity. But that's not their issue that they're having. Their issue is that they were made promises for how their funds would be managed, and then those promises were all broken very quickly, within less than a week of granting or of gifting those funds.
Well, and I think even with giving over control and ownership, even if there's a breach of promise, so to speak, that's probably not the best legal standing, but it's more of a breach of responsible fiduciary exercise and duty mm-hmm. over the assets, because it's not the donors who were harmed so much as it is the organizations that they were going to give the money to.
Yes, yes. And a lot of them, the problems that people have with donor advised funds nowadays is that they say that people just, like you said, park their money there. They don't really know what they want to do. They don't know what causes they want to support. But this family went in there. They knew what causes they wanted to support. They knew what they wanted to do. They had a plan for that money. It wasn't just going to sit there. And so they found a charity that they felt would be able to help them to distribute those funds effectively and to handle the money effectively. And that was not the case.
So I feel like in today's world, we've reached a place where competence is usually assumed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would venture to say that most organizations that have been in business and continue to be in business and have a high visibility to the public
mm-hmm.
hopefully act appropriately and are competent at their jobs.
And, yeah.
And let me just assume that this was not malicious on the part of any member or employee of Fidelity Charitable. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't presume that to be the case. How on earth could something like this happen at an institution that should be so well grounded and have so many controls in place that at minimum, even if they sold the stock quickly,
mm-hmm.
their algorithms shouldn't have been competing against each other in bidding the stock down? Yeah. How did this happen? Any ideas?
I have no idea how this could have happened. It's definitely a sign of a hole in their system that they're going to have to fix and figure out where it came in. Because, it could have been human error. Maybe somebody just didn't check a right box. It could have been technology error. There's a bug in the algorithms that made them all multiple deploy at one time. There's really a variety of things that could have happened. But it will definitely be in Fidelity Charitable's best interest in order to show what they have done to prevent this and what they've learned and how they're going to move forward. Because Fidelity is one of the top three commercial donor advice funds in the country. I mean, it has, the last number I looked at, I believe, was over $85 billion in assets. So they're not a small mom and pop community foundation who don't seem to have this problem also. They're big. They have their financial institution. They have their charity. They have trained, highly educated financial advisors, software engineers. Like, what? Where did it go?
Yeah. So mm-hmm. so let's assume that let's not just assume. We know
mm-hmm.
people are people. Humans are going to make mistakes. Yeah. Companies will make errors. Let's hope that they're going to fix this. And I would trust that they would, mm-hmm. especially with the family pursuing it, which the family yes. should do.
They should hold them accountable for the mishandling.
Yeah. What does this mean for a foundation or a donor advice fund platform when things like this occur?
I think it definitely gives pause to the donors before they're going to donate, because this whole thing was a major concern for the family. And they were made promises to address those specific concerns. And then those promises were promptly broken. So that breaks the trust in the charity, because that is their fiduciary responsibility and responsibility to the public to provide aid and to help them do this. And to break those promises, like 2 days after you receive the gift, is not going to sit well with anybody.
Yeah, I really wish we could see more details here mm-hmm. instead of just the complaint that's been filed, because I want to ask, how could Fidelity have prevented this? How could mm-hmm. any other organization hopefully prevent yeah. this from ever happening to them? Do you have any thoughts on that, even though we don't have any of the details of what was going on internally with Fidelity on this?
I would say within the best interests of both the donor and the organization to get it in writing. Because a lot of what's in the complaint is from emails and just phone verbal conversations. That if there is something that's not in their normal policy or that you have concerns about, I feel that it is appropriate to ask for those things in writing for that specific gift to make sure that the donor and the charity are on the same page.
So are emails sufficient for in writing, or are you talking about a separate formal agreement?
I'm talking about a separate formal agreement.
Okay.
Because then it's, you know, the person is authorized to make those promises, whereas the man that they were communicating with may not have been authorized to make those promises that he did.
Yeah, so briefly, this brings us into an entirely different issue.
Mm-hmm.
When are you saying it's appropriate for donors to make donations contingent upon keeping the charity making promises out of the ordinary?
I would not say out of the ordinary. Not any of that would jeopardize their legal or their charitable purpose. They would still need to be in compliance with the law and with the, especially if it's a charity that's for a specific cause, like Lyme disease, that it would need to be in accordance with the laws and the charity's purpose. So as with this one, it wasn't breaking any laws to have them wait to start liquidating and to liquidate gradually. It was not their normal policy. But that doesn't mean that they would liquidate all at one time. That was not the policy.
Yeah, so I'm just going to mm-hmm. extrapolate what I think you're trying to say here and try to rephrase that. So what I'm getting is it's really not appropriate for donors to put excessive restrictions mm-hmm. on gifts that really impairs a charity's ability to function as a charity ought to.
Right, right.
However, especially if it's in the best interest of hopefully the end user charities, having an agreement for how the funds are managed,
mm-hmm.
especially in terms of liquidating for a sell, making sure that the best price is reached, there mm-hmm. are times where exceptions and specific agreements might be appropriate.
Yes, and this was an exceptionally large gift. I mean, it was between the cash and the shares, it was around $100 million. I mean, this is not a small gift. This is a very large and requires a lot more management than a small couple thousand dollar gift would. And so that's something also to take into consideration, is that when you're gifting something this big, the charity needs to be able to handle and to do the administration and the financial compliance and normal accounting for such a large, complicated gift of mixed assets.
So, as a takeaway, I know that this podcast is about ethics mm-hmm. and interesting stories we find that have economic impact. Mm-hmm. I know we've been talking pretty solely about donor advised funds and the issues with this gift and the allegations against Fidelity Charitable here and proper means of handling gifts of this nature. What does this mean ethically? Did Fidelity or does Fidelity have an obligation to the donors on any front? And that's different than the legal obligations mm-hmm. here. What do you think the ethics of this case might be?
I definitely think that there is an ethical implication here, even in just the principle that Fidelity broke their promises to the donors. Yes, it was related to their financial and like they have legal standing for, probably have legal standing for this. But the fact that they broke their promises and did not tell the donor and say, hey, you know what, we're actually, like, we think this might be a good idea to liquidate here, instead of counseling with them and trying to, you know, work with them to build that relationship and to build that trust. They broke that trust and then stonewalled the donors. And so ethically, it's, you know, people want to know that they're, when they give to a charity, that the charity is going to be responsible. And if they put, if the charity for such large gifts, you know, makes agreements for how the gifts are going to be handled, that's going to be honored.
So I'm hearing it's less about even the exact agreement details mm-hmm. and more about not making commitments you can't keep. And if you make a commitment, keep it. And mm-hmm. well, I think it's also important to note that there are times when a promise that you've made previously
mm-hmm.
might need to be thrown away Thrown away is a bad word. I don't like that.
Re-examined. In the current circumstances.
Yeah, with the current circumstances, because new things come up. Maybe something more important came up. But even if that's the case, communication is key here.
It is. And even though, you know, the donors, when they gift this, they gift away their ownership and control. So, I mean, really, they don't have any control over the funds. They can't. It's not like they can take it back. It's an irrevocable gift. But the fact that Fidelity went behind their back, and even though they said, we will do this, they went and did another thing very quickly afterwards. It's not even that, you know, they'd held on to the asset for a while. There's turnover. Somebody didn't know about the agreement, and things were done. It was less than a week. And so there's not that. I mean, there's really no explanation that I can think of to justify why they broke that promise.
So really, to sum it up, I think what we've arrived at is it will be fascinating to watch how this case progresses. I agree with your earlier statement that it's in Fidelity's best interest to settle rather than let it go through the court system. Mm-hmm. However, the best thing that could have been done, even if Fidelity could not avoid having this occur, communicating on a much more detailed and efficient and better manner with the clients probably would have solved most of the issues here, even with the loss of the funds.
Yes, just managing expectations on the part of the donor, even as circumstances change, policies change, managing their expectations so that they're not blindsided and all of a sudden they're coming up with, well, what happened? And then they're not getting any information.
Yeah, well, and I would also hope on the part of Fidelity, which is a large enough organization to easily afford this, making recompense to not to the donors but to the charities for which the money was intended for the loss.
Yes, yeah, I think that would be a very good way for them to show that they take this error very seriously and that they value the funds that are gifted to go to charity, because that is a sacrifice. I mean, they could have kept the money, paid the taxes, and then just gone on their merry way. But they decided to use this money to support a cause that they're very passionate about and that they want to see the impact of it while they're in their lifetime. Because it's my understanding that members of their family have been impacted by Lyme disease. So this is a very personal cause for them. It wasn't just one they drew out of a hat. And so to see Fidelity, you know, honor and respect and acknowledge that commitment and that sacrifice that they made to gift this to charity in order to help those impacted by Lyme disease would be a very good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of issues that I've seen come up in my career with business and in working with nonprofits and personally. And at the end of the day, I think one of the most common solutions to nearly every problem, actually it's a dual pronged solution, is one, communicate and admit the problem. And if you can acknowledge the problem earlier, it's usually easier to make recompense.
Yes.
And recompense needs made.
It does. It does. There is a serious error. It's going to impact a lot of people, not just Fidelity, but also the charities that could have received money, who then could have helped those in need. There's a ripple of impact that this has had.
Yeah. So, well, again, this complaint is simply allegations, and neither of us were there, so we don't really know what was happening or is happening inside Fidelity Charitable with this case. At the same time, I hope that that Fidelity Charitable will do whatever it takes to resolve the matter and make sure that the money goes to these end user charities, that these Lyme disease organizations get the funding that was intended for them.
Absolutely.
So here's signing off. Hopefully you enjoyed this podcast for The Ethical Economist. Please join us the next time we find anything interesting in the news or interesting ethically to talk about.